Welcome to St. Louis on the Air. Far too many women in this country and others are caught in a vicious cycle. They are sexually and physically abused as children, often turn to drugs and alcohol, and wind up on the streets as prostitutes. It's a hard road and a hard knock life, but many of these women have had their lives turned around by a residential program established in Nashville, Tennessee in 1997. It's called Magdalene. Its founder is Reverend Becca Stevens, an Episcopal priest and chaplain at St. Augustine's at Vanderbilt University. A St. Louis Magdalene is scheduled to open here next year. Reverend Stevens joins me in studio to talk about that, as does Reverend Mike Kinnon, Dean of Christ Church Cathedral, in St. Louis, and president of the board of Magdalene St. Louis. We also have two women whose stories are typical of the women Magdalene helps. Sheila McCain, who is now on the Magdalene staff and a graduate, will join us a little bit later. But with us now is Christine McDonald. She lives in St. Louis and has told her story in her book, Cry Purple. She's working with Magdalene. Thank you so much, folks, for being with us.
Thank you. Great to be here.
Mike, sorry to have stumbled over the introduction.
No problem.
We'll get over that, I'm sure. Becca, nice to have you here in St. Louis.
I love coming.
Well, it's not your first visit, I know, and we're glad to have you. Let me begin this with you. Can you give me kind of the Cliff Notes version of how Magdalene got started?
Sure. It was 1997, and we decided we wanted to open just a sanctuary for five women. And the idea was that it was women who were coming in and out of every system and exhausting the system in Nashville. The first five women we had probably had none of them had been on the streets less than 10 years or had about an average of 100 arrests on their record. All of them had suffered, you know, really childhood trauma and had just needed a place to heal, a long-term place to heal. And I thought, wouldn't it be great just to offer a beautiful home, come in. There's no authority that lives in the house with them. Offered as a gift for all the gratitude all of us know, for all the, you know, the kindness people have shown us over and over. Women came in. They got clean and sober. They got their lives back together. They got work. And so we kept opening houses. It was supposed to be just a really small thing, and it's really turned into kind of a national movement as the whole mood of the nation has changed, where now people are really beginning to see and use the word trafficking about women who have prostituted themselves or been prostituted.
How many houses do you have now?
In Nashville, we have six houses, and we're working with about seven other communities to help them establish similar programs with communities in their local places. It's not a franchise. We're just sister programs helping each other and helping women come off the streets.
And other cities as well.
Mm-hmm. This is St. Louis.
Yeah, right.
Okay, so New Orleans opened their house last year. It's called Eden House. There's a group in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. We went 2 weeks ago to a group in North Platte, Nebraska that just opened Deborah's Legacy. There's a Magdalene in Charleston, South Carolina. There's a group in Rochester, New York that is starting several places around the country.
And you started a business in Nashville called Thistle House, is that correct?
Thistle Farms.
Yeah, what is that all about?
Sure. When we had been open about 4 years, we realized the women were getting clean and sober. They were doing amazing work, learning about their addictions, learning about what forgiveness and freedom felt like. They were all still dirt poor. You know, you can't find work if you hit the streets at 14 years old and, you know, you dropped out and you have nothing.
You have nothing.
Yeah, and some of them are felonies.
Yeah.
So we decided to start our own bath and body care company called Thistle Farms, and we make these beautiful, all-natural products. People can go online and look at them, thistlefarms.org. We're in about 260 stores now across the country, and what we're hoping is that we're going to figure out a way to partner with Magdalene House and Mike's group with the women that are coming in to figure out how to make this kind of a distribution center.
Do you have any idea nationwide how many women are in this situation?
I do. There's a lot of different statistics out there. One of them that has struck me just as the enormity of the issues that we're dealing with is by Shared Hope, which works with the State Department. And their statistics are that there's 100,000 women under the age of 18 who have been exploited sexually through both pornography and the buying and selling of sex. And so all those women are at risk for, you know, continued just rape, poverty, jail, you know, injustices, finding their way under bridges. It's hard, and what I don't want anybody to do, though, is hear those numbers and think, well, what difference does it make if we can just help a small group? Because it makes a huge difference. It really is about healing this whole community of St. Louis and having a new approach to how you treat women who are coming out of jails and off the streets and saying, there is a lot of hope and we don't have to give up on anybody. And so my whole hope is that we start really small here in St. Louis with Magdalene and the whole beautiful group that's starting, and then it'll just keep that ripple effect and heal and heal and heal.
Well, Mike, you didn't start small last night. You had a launching campaign, and down at the cathedral, not, as I understand it, it was a big house.
We had we estimate more than 400 people there, and it was our official fundraising launch. It was our first major public fundraising event for Magdalene St. Louis. But it wasn't the beginning. We've been working on this for about 20 months. About 20 months ago, we brought Becca and Sheila, whom we're going to hear from in a little bit, and Katrina Robertson here. And I've known Becca for 15, 16 years and first heard about what was going on in Nashville and then went and saw it myself. And there's that great feeling that we've all had when you first see something that is life-changing and amazing, and you see what is possible you didn't necessarily think was possible before. So we gathered people around this idea in St. Louis, and it really spread. It really took hold. And so the 400 people last night didn't kind of come out of nowhere. This has been 20 months of getting a board, getting our 501c3, building a lot of partnerships with service communities, with the city, with the courts, with the police department, to really build a foundation to make this work. And now we're ready to take the training wheels off and roll.
Do you have any sense of what the numbers are like in St. Louis? The number 100,000 that Becca gave us is staggering.
So, and that's the numbers in St. Louis are a moving target, and it's not a community that people have cared much about. And part of the because of that, there hasn't been a huge amount of statistical work done on it. We know that we know the neighborhoods where there is a lot of prostitution, particularly on Broadway, areas in North St. Louis and College Hill and Carondelet, and we know what has happened with those women in the past. Is the way St. Louis has dealt with prostitution is residents of a certain area where it happens complain, and they complain that it's happening in their neighborhood to their alderman. The aldermen go to the police department. The police department does an enforcement sweep, and women go to jail. The prostitution moves to another neighborhood for a while until the cycle repeats itself, and everybody hates this. The police hate it. The judicial system hates it. The women certainly hate it. It's not doing any good. Our response to it as a community has been the only idea we have is to move it around. Well, this is a better idea. And I think that's why we got 400 people last night, is because we know women shouldn't be treated this way. We're tired of it. We've been looking for a better idea, and here it is.
All you need now is a house, from what I understand. Is that
correct? We need a lot more than that, but we do need a house.
Yeah. We do need a house.
Yeah.
And how do you go about finding that? I mean, I would think that some neighborhoods might not want such a place in their neighborhood.
I think the reason neighborhoods initially might not want this is out of huge misunderstandings about who the women are and about what Magdalene is. I think once we go into a neighborhood and engage the neighbors in conversations about what Magdalene really is, what the experience in Nashville is going to be, they're going to realize that this is going to be an absolute boon to the neighborhood. These are going to be women who are going to be wonderful neighbors. It is going to add to the neighborhood community. It's actually a conversation we're having over lunch today with some members of the Board of Aldermen. And so we're looking in several different places. We're looking in conjunction with folks from the city of St. Louis and a couple other nonprofits in town that own properties. So we're open to buying a house, certainly open to having a house given to us. And so any number of possibilities there.
And the idea is that it's not you're not opening a halfway
not
house.
A halfway
you're
house.
Not opening a treatment center. You're inviting four women to come and create community long term. I mean, they're really good neighbors.
Yeah. Has this been any kind of an issue for you in Nashville with the six different properties?
No, and the thing is, it's been really nice is that we've had, so many friends in the government and the courts that have welcomed us. And now they see that, our communities in Nashville contribute about a half a million to $1 million close. I mean, it depends on how you do the numbers. In revenue back to the city now, with all the people coming in from around the country that want to learn about the model, from court restitution costs we pay to taxes to income generation to savings. If you have 40 women employed at Thistle Farms, none of them are getting arrested. It's a huge savings to the city, and people embrace it. And they say, thank you so much for coming. It's really been beautiful. Yeah. And you expect there to be opposition sometimes when people just really want to hope with you.
You know, I can see it in your face. I mean, I can see the emotion in your face, even as you talk about it after all these years. It's very obvious.
Oh, that's sweet. Yeah. Thanks.
Let me turn to Christine McDonald now. Christine, your problems, if I can put it that way, predate Magdalen House, as I understand
yes.
it. I've seen you quoted as saying you wish it had been around when you were on the streets.
Yes.
Tell us your story.
Okay. Well, I started out as a youth that had gone through some disturbing things. And when you're young and you go through disturbing things, sometimes we don't know how to process those things. And when you don't have people to keep you safe, you look for alternatives. And I became a runaway. And then I got in when I was 15, I had run away. And this was my chance. I went to the big city, and I was going to stay hidden in this big city, be merged in this big city, so I wouldn't get caught and have to go home. And I walked from the station. I had stolen a check, and I got the station. I walked and found an abandoned house, and I crawled in. It was in wintertime. And I was there for about 5 days, scared and no electricity in this abandoned old dirty house. And I was hungry, and I took off walking, and it was winter. I hadn't changed clothes. And a guy pulled up beside me, and, you know, he was like, hey, you know, you need a lift. And I felt the warmth. I got in, and, you know, he took my clothes to wash them. He took me to a hotel, and he brought me food, and he took my clothes and washed them, and he asked to take pictures of me. And he left money on the desk and said, the room is yours. So my beginning journey was for survival and safety. And I got into drugs. I got into prostitution, and I developed a $1,000 a day cocaine habit, which led me to 103 arrests, 9 felony convictions, and 7 trips to the state penitentiary. And every time I attempted, I should say the few times I attempted, because there weren't many, I went to treatment once. And when I got there, I was in a room with 3 other women. And they told me when I got there, there was 30 of us. And they said, you know what? 6 months from now, 3 of you are going to be clean. A year from now, 1 of you will still be clean. And the 3 other women that were there besides me, one was a housewife addicted to prescription drugs. Another one was a functioning alcoholic whose boss sent him. Another was a cheerleader who got caught smoking marijuana on homecoming day. They couldn't relate to what I was going through. I had been raped. I had been beaten. At one time, I was beaten and held at gunpoint to dig my own shallow grave and left for dead. How do you relate to that with these people? And that took me back out using for 11 years. And then I finally, you know, 11 years later, you know, well, I'm not going to die out here. I guess I'm going to try to. But I'd never had a job. I had 103 arrests. I had 9 felonies. Nobody was trying to hire me. I couldn't get food stamps in the state of Missouri because a convicted drug offender is banned for life. It's one more barrier our women face. Another barrier our women face is under 18, a victim, over 18, a criminal. But they don't look at the scars that they're carrying that led them to the... My story's not an exception to the rule. My story's a familiar story with other survivors. When you look at the statistics that they have in Nashville, which is, she's just my hero. Becca's my hero. You know, it's just beautiful. I got to go there, and I talked to one of the girls. I'm like, you've been arrested 86 times. Why? Why this? And she's like, you know, I get to take the drugs out of the equation, but I got all these people here to love me for the rest of the stop. And I can get loved with no strings attached. And that's something a lot of them, and a lot of us, never had.
Are you working with Magdalen now?
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. And what precisely is your job with them?
Oh, stuff like this, to tell people, share my experience and share the journey and the value and the importance to the women. That I love these women, and I know the pain and burden. I lived it 17 years.
Part of what we're doing is we have different task groups, and one of them is developing our healing process, taking the program aspect of Magdalene in Nashville and looking what that's going to be like translating it here to St. Louis. And that's an area where Christine is just being incredibly helpful.
I can see that. What a story and what a storyteller. Christine, congratulations to you for being where you are today, given where you had been at that time. I have to take a break. We'll come back in just a moment and continue our conversation. With me in studio is Reverend Becca Stevens. She's the founder of Magdalene. That's what we're talking about today. It's a residential program for women that is coming to St. Louis. And sometime in 2014, we'll have a Magdalene house here in St. Louis. Reverend Mike Kinman is with us in studio. He's the dean at Christ Church Cathedral. And he, and I can say it this time, Mike, I'm producing.
You did that well.
I'm getting there. And he's the head of the board of Magdalene St. Louis. And Christine McDonald, you just heard from. We'll be back to continue our conversation. We'd love to get you into it. Give us a call at 382-8255. If you'd like to talk about Magdalene and its programs, you can send us an email at talk@stlpublicradio.org. We will take a tweet at STL on air, and you can also reach us through Facebook. Back in just a moment. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. Hello again and welcome back as we continue our conversation on Magdalene, a residential program for women founded in 1997 in Nashville, Tennessee by one of our guests, Reverend Becca Stevens, as I say, the founder of Magdalene. With me in studio also is Reverend Mike Kinman, Dean of Christ Church Cathedral in St. Louis and President of the Board of Magdalene St. Louis. Also in studio with me is Christine McDonald. She is the author of Cry Purple. You just heard her very eloquently tell her story just a couple of moments ago. It is also told in that book, Cry Purple, which is available where books are most logically available.
Actually, so.
What's that?
Actually, I think it's available online. It's not in a bookstore. Christine, why don't you just say that real quick?
Yeah, it's available. You can go to crypurple.com or you can go to amazon.com and get it in print or paperback version.
All right. Well, we've got that out of the way. And Cry Purple, once again, is the name of the book. Becca, this story you've just heard, I'm sure, is one that you've heard many times or variations on it. I gather it's a very similar kind of story.
It is. It's a story that is universal in its proportions, whether you're going to Rwanda and talking to, you know, a survivor of the genocide, or you're on the streets of Ghana talking to a young woman with a baby, or you're in Nashville, Tennessee, or St. Louis. Really, the issues are universal around sexual violence on women's body, but they're born on individual backs. I mean, my story is my story. Her story is her story. You know, we need to hear each other. And we have to respond individually. The healing happens in an individual way. So my thing and my hope has been all these years is that love is powerful enough to heal us, and that together we can all be better than if we try to do this journey by ourselves. And what I'm so grateful for when you see it in my head, you say you can see it when I'm talking about it, is that over and over I've heard stories where you can't kill hope, you can't kill dreams, and women come together and they're about healing, and it makes you like believe even deeper how powerful love can be.
Yeah. You mentioned countries in Africa. There is an association between your organization and these countries. Is that not right?
There's four different partnerships we have, one in Accra, Ghana, one in Kigali, Rwanda, one in Liwala, Kenya, and one in San Eduardo, Ecuador. And they're all partnerships based around our shared trade model and our social enterprises. And so people can, if you want to go see any of our products, any of the books that talk about this model, we just published a book called Snake Oil that is about the community and about some of the history if people want more information about it.
We'll put a link to your website on our website at stlpublicradio.org. Give me a sense of, we're starting to get calls and I want to go to those, but give me a sense of what these 2 years are like for the women. You talked about generating an entrepreneurial spirit and that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. But what's the routine like day to day?
Well, the routine is you come in and you rest and you figure out what it is that you're needing. And then we figure out how to help you get that. But everybody's working an educational track. Everybody's working a recovery track. Everybody is working a health track. So you're learning about your body, your mind, and your spirit, really doing everything you can to get well and to heal. And so the first year is about learning all about the addiction, learning about your body, learning about the triggers, learning about trauma. Everybody we have served is raped. Everybody we have served has childhood trauma. So going back far enough and having therapy for that. Then the second year is all about work and saving and generating income and making paying back court restitution costs, where you might have gotten a traffic ticket when you were on the streets for $50, it may cost you $4,000 now to pay it back. So you have to have a team helping you work on that so you can ever get a license back, so you can ever drive to work again. Mm-hmm. You know, and we work on that. And so by the end of 2 years, you have money saved. It's a match savings program. Women head out. They have transportation. Hopefully they're out of debt and they're on their way.
Mike, you are quoted as having said, and one of the things I've read about what's going to be happening here in St. Louis, that these women are your teachers. What do you mean by that?
There is an honesty about their wounds. One of the things that we're taught to do, and we learn this very early in life. You know, a little child falls down, they have no problem. They want to show everyone their wounds. We learn really quickly not to show each other our wounds and not to reach out for help. That reaching out for help is weakness. You go sit, they start every day at Thistle Farms in Nashville, it's called the Circle, sitting in the Circle. And it is this time of incredible honest celebration and honest conversation and honest just naming of what their lives are like. And there is a way that when I say they're my teachers, the women I have met both in Magdalen and graduating from the program, they name what's going on with them. They own it. They're not ashamed of it. Shame is just an awful, debilitating thing in our lives. Not ashamed of it. And they go after it, and they say, how can we work together to all be better? If we were all like that, imagine how the world would be. If I were more like that, imagine how better my life would be. That's how they're my teachers.
How does that strike you, Christine?
I just think it's great. You know, I know when I was trying to figure out how to find my path, when I took the drugs away, I still had so much shame and so much guilt. And you couldn't just go out and, I mean, hey, I couldn't just go have coffee talk about that kind of stuff, you know, after being a hooker for 17 years, you know. And then these girls can bond together and they're there to support each other because they've all been there. And they can take ownership, you know, of their struggles today and be honest. Hey, yeah, I'm having a bad day. But then the other girls can love each other and support them through that until they love themselves. It's just phenomenal. I went down there and it's just like amazing. They're just surrounded with all this love. And then they just love them until they're able to love themselves. And then they're able to be such a huge component in their community. I mean, it's just imperative for us to look at this in our community and stop keeping this cycle of prostitution that we have. We send them to jail and they come back out and there's just no end to that cycle. And we can share here in St. Louis, we have this opportunity to say, hey, we care about you as a fellow human being. We care about your wounds. We care about your hurt. And we're going to give you this opportunity. We're going to brace you and we're going to allow you to hurt and we're going to allow you to heal.
I'd like to go to the phones now because I think our first caller will respond to what you've just said and to you. So let's bring in Ed calling from St. Louis.
Yes, I have a 15-year-old daughter who I'm very proud of. And one of the reasons I'm proud of her is she's authentic. She's authentic. And when I heard what Christine said, that was authentic. And I would have been proud if she was my daughter because that was authentic. And keep up the good work.
Thanks for the call, Ed. Would you like to respond to that, Christine?
Thank you, Ed. I'm going to cry. I'm sorry.
I think we all are.
Thank you.
Becca, is it possible to pull off the project like this without the honesty and love that we've been talking about?
I don't think so. And I think that, you know, community demands more from us than that. Like our community, the bigger community that we all live in, needs us to speak our truth without fear of being shot down or being called something or any of that. That we do better if we can be honest with each other, and we'll be better ourselves to be able to speak with that voice.
How many women have you helped, do you think?
There's been 150 women who have come and graced the doors of Magdalen. We started off really slow, like I said, and now we're building to about helping 28 women over the 2-year period at a time, which is still really, really small, which is beautiful. But 72% of the women who have come in are clean and sober 2.5 years after they leave the program.
That's a pretty good number. I mean, obviously, you'd want it to be 100%, but yes. 3 out of 4 is not
especially
bad.
When you're talking about women who came into the program addicted to crack and heroin.
Yeah. Right.
And so 72% clean and sober is unheard of when you're talking about that.
Yeah, and we have lost, you're right, we have lost women who have relapsed and gone back out to the streets and died. And after the first year that we did the program, we had this beautiful young woman who was first raped by her own dad at a very, very early age. And she went out and used and was kidnapped in a truck stop and then died. It was shot execution style. And I was really scared it was going to taint everybody or shut us down or there was going to be a lot of judgment about, see, you can't help this group or see, or any of that stuff. And it wasn't like that. Everybody pulled together and said, oh, my gosh, this is a life and death issue. We can do more.
Back to the phones. Let's have Phyllis join the conversation. Phyllis, go ahead.
I have a question for you. From the name, is this a group run by a specific faith, or do you teach a specific faith belief when the women are at your home?
The answer is no. Becca, why don't you talk more about that?
Well, I would just say that the program in Nashville is definitely based on the 12-step model, and people are in recovery, and it's a very spiritual program. And they are not about a specific faith or faith-based. I mean, they're just 501c3s.
Right. And I think that's a very important point. And a lot of people have experienced faith as just one more thing that's imposed on them, and this is what you need to do. And what the 12-step model does very effectively is really help people find their own spirituality. And it is absolutely a spiritual program, but it is not a faith-based program or a religious program in the way that we traditionally think about that. But you sit in the circle of the women, and you hear that it's deeply spiritual, but it's not any spirituality had been put on them. It is the spirituality that comes from them.
You know, we've done some programs dealing with drug abuse recently, and the 12-step programs, Alcoholics Anonymous, and some other organizations have come up. And one of the issues that has come up amongst the folks who have called is the issue of anonymity. And I would think that with an organization like yours, Becca, anonymity is maybe something you would not want to deal with.
Right. And you know, I think people own their own stories.
Yeah.
So I would not tell someone's story that wasn't public. And it was one of the things in the book Snake Oil that we just wrote. There's about 20 stories told in the book. And the question was, you know, did you have everybody's permission? Did people want their story told? And it was like, look, the only people that were mad is the people who didn't make it into the book. That was like, because it's like, I want to be heard. This is my story, and I want to tell it, and I want other people to know you can have hope. If you are dealing with drug issues, if you're dealing with some, you know, old childhood trauma and sexual abuse, you can be better. And this is a story of hope, and it is about survivors, and it is about joy.
There's a catharsis element, has to be, in letting it out and telling it.
Yeah, and you know, anonymity absolutely has its place. But really the reason that you have anonymity is it's a concession. It's a concession to a culture that is ashamed.
Yes.
And we live in a culture of shame. We live in a culture of condemnation.
Yes.
And because of that, anonymity is necessary. We're creating a different culture here, a culture without condemnation, a culture without shame.
Well, you also think about how anonymous were those three women that were trapped in the house for 10 years. Mm-hmm. People were walking by and you couldn't see. They were completely anonymous. And when they finally broke out in there, I mean, I am a big fan of people can own their story and not tell it and not hold on to it. But also to provide people an opportunity to say, can you see me? Do you know what I went through for so many years? And now I'm free. Yeah.
It's a difference between you can choose to share your story or not share it because it's yours, not feeling like you have to hide it.
Yeah.
Right. That's a good way to put it. Let's take another call before we take a next break. And I believe the name is Shug, calling from Wildwood. Go ahead.
Shug?
Yes.
Hi, go ahead.
I am a member of Christ Church Cathedral, and I am also and I use the term loosely, survivor of sexual abuse, starting at the age of about 9 years old. And I would like very much for these women of Magdalen to be seen as something other than victims, also as heroes. I have lived most of my life hiding in shame, afraid of what people would think or say about me if they knew this about me. You carry guilt, you carry shame, you carry fear. And I carry it to this day. And it wasn't until last night in listening and seeing these women in front of 400 plus women that I felt that I could start my own healing process. I thank Becca, I thank Magdalene House, and I thank Mike Kinman for making that possible in my life.
I want to thank you for calling, and I want to say that one of the things that I think has been transformative about, you know, life in domestically in the U.S. right now is the transformation of seeing women who are on the streets as, you know, victimized as well as not just being criminals. And I think that's huge. And then when people are coming off the streets, I agree. And when people are coming out of their own closets and out of their own shame, it is heroic.
It is.
And it is brave. And I applaud you.
Yeah. And it, Shug and I obviously know each other. She's not just a parishioner. She's our head verger at Christ Church Cathedral and a remarkable woman and leader in our congregation. And I think we don't talk about heroes in the right way enough. And you know, we could do a whole show on the hero culture in the United States. But it is the women who've been through the Magdalene program. There's also a way it's the women who are still out on the streets, who are somehow trying to find a way to survive. And women who, you know, have endured sexual abuse and aren't out on the streets but are walking around with that around us every day, and we don't know it. There is something heroic about that.
Absolutely.
I have to take another break right now. We're going to say goodbye to Christine McDonald because Sheila McLean is going to come in and tell us her story as well. We are talking about Magdalene, the residential program for women. It's coming to St. Louis. It's already thriving in Nashville, Tennessee, and in several other places. We'll continue the conversation, and those of you who have called and are waiting, please hang on for just a little bit. We'll get to those calls. Becca Stevens is with us, Reverend Becca Stevens, who is the founder of Magdalene, and also you just heard from Reverend Mike Kinman, Dean of Christ Church Cathedral in St. Louis. He is president of the board of Magdalene St. Louis, which will officially launched last night. The fundraising drive was launched, but it'll be 2014 before you're really in business here in St. Louis. Back in just a moment. Christine, thank you so much for being with
Thanks,
us. You
Christine.
Tell a
thank
wonderful
you.
Story. You're very inspiring. Thank you.
Thank you.
Back in just a moment. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. Hello again, and welcome back to our conversation about Magdalene, the residential program for women. Pleased to be joined in studio now with Sheila McLean, who is assistant resident manager of Magdalene and a graduate of Magdalene as well. Sheila, thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
Tell us your story.
Well, at about the age of six, I started getting molested by anyone that my mom would bring home with her. My mom was also included in that situation, and that went on for quite a few years, and by the age of 14, I had really kind of gotten tired of what was going on at home, and I ran away. I met a pimp, and I've been cross-country selling my body. Had a lot of bad things happen to me in that process. I've been duct taped, tied up, kicked out in a Salt Lake City canyon. I've been raped in a lot of inhumane ways. Just had a really hard time out there. I came to Nashville in 96. The pimp had brought me there, and I figured out a way to get away from the situation without getting hurt too bad, and so I ended up getting away. But I ended up staying on the streets for about 8 more years because of my addiction. And so I chose to, well, I really wouldn't call it choose. I didn't really have a choice as far as supporting my habit, but I stayed in prostitution because that was my ways and means of supporting my habit. And I came into the Magdalene program in 2004, and I've been clean ever since.
How did you find Magdalene, or did it find you?
I think it found me. They were doing an outreach out on Murfreesboro Road, and that's one of the streets where the women hang out at. And there was this woman there. Her name was Kim Norman, but she kind of like touched me, and I don't know what it was, but I crossed the street to come have a conversation with her, and that's when the seed was planted. And so whenever I went to jail a couple months later, I wrote the judge a letter telling him about the program and telling him that I definitely fit the criteria.
Was there a moment, can you recall a moment when it turned around for you, when something clicked as being part of Magdalene, when you said, well, this is my new life, I'm not going back?
Well, most definitely for me, because when I was in the program, I was like three or four months into the program, and I got diagnosed with breast cancer. And so that changed my life, okay? While it changed my life, it also gave me a sense of what unconditional love is, because everyone in the community came together and they loved me through that process. They made me feel beautiful about myself when I was bald headed. I mean, they did though. Our program is really, really centered around love. And when you walk in, it's just something that you feel and you know it's there.
Well, take it from me. Bald is beautiful. There's nothing wrong with being.
Well, here's
I rocked it.
Well, you did rock it, by the way. Yeah. And the other thing is, I mean, Sheila, when you were asking who your teachers are, I mean, Sheila is one of my great teachers. And one of the things she said to me after she had breast cancer and she had lost all her hair and we didn't know what was going to happen, I said, are you okay? And she goes, listen, I love being bald. All the scars on my head are a roadmap that they have reminded her of where she's come from and that she earned every one of those scars. And even though you could see them, they were teachers.
Right, they were teachers, and it helped me. It kind of gave me, I don't know, it just let me know where I've been. Okay, but that's exactly, my past is exactly what it is my past. And it kind of helped me connect with where I want to go.
What you're a teacher with Magdalene and do teaching. What is your biggest challenge in that role?
I don't know. You know, that's a really good question. I don't find it challenging for myself because I love the women so much, and because I can identify with where they're coming from, it's easier for me to communicate and help. Is because when you've been there and done that, it's so much easier to be able to recognize and to be able to help. But probably, I guess, like trying to stop their process, you know. I try to catch them before they fall, and then sometimes you have to allow them their process.
You must have known some women who didn't make it, some of the 28% that go back. Do you? And what are your feelings and thoughts about them?
My heart goes out to them, you know, and I do. I know a lot of, well, we haven't had a lot, but some of the women that have had real bad relapses, I've known, and my heart just goes out to them, you know, and I just hope that they find their way home, you know. I just hope they find their way home.
Mike, this is going to be tough for you because it's going to happen at some point in St.
Yeah,
Louis.
Happening.
It's inevitable.
Yep.
It's going to be tough.
Part of the model of Magdalene and why it works is you realize that there is a huge depth of pain and woundedness that drives someone to the streets. It's not any one thing. And what that means is there really is a huge depth of love that you're found in community to get someone off the streets. And you can't say, we're going to do this for 1,000 women, even if, you know, there's more than 1,000 out there. You can't say that. It doesn't work. You can't. You have to start with 4 women or 5 women, which means one of the most painful part of Magdalene is the women you have to say, I'm sorry, we don't have room for you right now. And you have to do it because it's the only way it works is if you limit the size. Yeah. And that is going to be hard. And what we hope is, though, that the spirit of this program continues to reach out. We were at a meeting earlier with Sheila, and Sheila, what you talked about was part of what Magdalene did to you was turn you into someone who your whole life is outer directed now. Your whole life is directed towards you want to serve these other women who are still out there. And so it's not just how many are in the program. Every woman who graduates from the program, now you've got someone who's out there who's an active part of the solution. Someone like Christine, who has been there and can be a part of loving people into a new life in a unique way.
Yes, she can help be the voice until the women find their own voice.
So there's a new Sheila. Sheila has been reinvented and just a totally new person, right?
Yes, I believe so.
I think there's a little old Sheila in there. And you know what? And that is the truth. I mean, that Sheila is a passionate, joyful, compassionate person, and she was probably that way as a little girl. Mm-hmm. And it just helping restore that in her that makes her such a fiery, great voice for other women.
It was stolen from her.
Absolutely, right? Yeah. You think so?
Yeah, I was a protector, though. I used to protect my sister. I would let all the bad things happen to me so that they wouldn't happen to my sister.
And did they not happen to your sister?
No, they didn't.
Well, it's good for you for being the protector there. Let's go back to the phones. Dustin's been waiting a long time. Dustin, thanks for being so patient. Go ahead.
Yeah, I have a very short question. I know that these women have gone through a whole lot in their life. But from a public point of view, I wanted to know if there's a design in your program where they can help identify those people who relapsed or went back into the profession, or them themselves that have been in this program, have they been tested for HIV? You know, St. Louis is a very big hub for infectious diseases. Is there any way they can help extend to be able to identify other people so that there would be a way to stop the exponential spread of
I think what you're asking is about our, you know, testing and our responsibility, and that is, you know, absolutely part of any, you know, reliable mm-hmm. and legitimate community would be to test people and to be also looking at how to make sure people are healthy and getting assessments. Thanks.
Becca, what about funding? Is it all private donations? How do you support all of this? And will it be supported in St. Louis?
Mm-hmm. We don't take any federal or state funding. We never have in the 15 years. And we try to get people to remember all the gratitude they have for all the mercy that's been shown them and to give them an opportunity to give. In addition, we have great support from private foundations. We have one fundraiser a year. You guys had a great fundraiser last night, and I think it'll keep going. And then we sell the products, the Thistle Farms products that are – did I mention that they are amazing products?
Yeah, I believe
products.
You did.
Oh, yeah. I did. But they are.
Yeah.
And that helps, and that helps generate enough money to keep another woman off the streets and to have an income.
Can you tell
and
us –
the women are making them.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, I understand that. Can you tell us how much money it does generate?
Yeah, the our social enterprise generates about $750,000 a year.
That'll help.
That'll help.
That'll help. Back to the phones. Martin is waiting. Go ahead, Martin. You're on the air.
Hi. I'm a supporter of Magdalene House. I was at the event last night.
Yay!
I apologize. I was actually my daughter that started crying during Patricia's
She was
speech.
Great. We love kids at Christ Church Cathedral.
She'll be back. But I just wanted to call and congratulate you guys on getting Magdalene House open and started. I'm proud and I'll always be a supporter of the organization. I have a 3-year-old little girl, and I think a natural reaction of fathers everywhere is to worry about their mm-hmm. kids and everything that can happen to them. And it's good to know there's an organization like the Magdalene House that can help girls find their way home if they get lost. And so I'm very proud to support you guys and thank you for all the work you're going to do.
Great. Martin, thank you so much, and thanks for coming out last night and being a part of this movement here in St. Louis.
Absolutely.
Sheila, I think I turned to the phones when you wanted to say something with regard to the call and health care. Did you indicate you wanted to say something there? Okay. I have an email here from Terry, who writes, I have been listening to your program today and would love to work with this group. How do I find out about working for Magdalene House? Who do I call?
You can email our central email address, which is info@MagdalenSTL, that's one word, Magdalene, MagdalenSTL.org. So info@MagdalenSTL.org. Just email us.
And Terry, we'll put that address on our website at stlpublicradio.org so you can find
it
there.
And another way people can connect with us, our website is predictably www.MagdalenSTL.org, and that's also where you can donate to us online.
Okay. I think we've got it all in. Do you plan, or are you discussing any kind of innovative, maybe a little bit different ideas for Magdalene St. Louis, or is it pretty much going to follow the template established in Nashville?
We're looking – the reason we want to bring Magdalene to St. Louis is because it is so incredibly successful. And so we're looking for how do we transplant this model most fully to St. Louis.
part of particularly what our healing process group is working with is what are the differences? Are there cultural differences between the two cities? More to the point, what are the service partner availabilities in each place? So what we would like to do is change as little as possible. There may be some changes that are necessary based on services that are available more in Nashville or more in St. Louis or less and less. And that's what our Healing Task Force team is working on right now.
Didn't I see something, however, about your concern and position with regard to the Johns, which gets so many of these women into the predicament that they find themselves in?
Well, I don't think that's unique to St. Louis. I think it's really common to Nashville. And Johns are prosecuted at about a 10% rate of women prosecuted. That's probably even a liberal estimate there.
Women are arrested and men are given citations.
Right.
I'd much rather get a citation.
Why don't you talk about the John? Can you talk about the John School?
Sure. Do you want to hear about the John School?
We do. We've got about 3 minutes left. Go ahead.
Okay.
Go
for it. Just the John School is the idea that men who are arrested for solicitation have an opportunity to pay $200, $300 to come to an 8-hour school, much like a driving school, and learn about the difference between safe and legal sex and unsafe and illegal sex. And we've kept records on the Johns coming through for a long time. The majority of men who have come through the John School in Nashville, Tennessee, are married. And the health issues that your one caller talked about, one of the worst is that all those guys who are going to visit people who probably have had an STD at some point are going back to their homes and back into the community. And so to really talk about those issues and talk about how the sex industry is married to the drug industry, those are not separate things. And to talk about what's going to happen if men continue to do that, and what is it about anonymous illegal sex that is driving men in the sickness that is in the men as well?
How do you work with the legislature in Tennessee? I mean, are you active in working with legislators on various issues that are common to what you're doing and what you're working with?
We have a lot of good friends in the state legislature. The mayor of Nashville, who was the big first supporter of us, Mayor Bredesen, ended up being the governor, and that helped us a lot. Generally, I just pray every day for our state legislature. They have a very, very hard job, and it's been a crazy season for them in Tennessee. But we just keep talking about the issues, inviting them to stuff to humanize prostitutes for them, and so that the legal issues also have a human face.
All right, and I suppose you're going to have your work cut out for you here, too.
Well, and again, this is an area where we're building a great foundation. Lewis Reed's on our advisory board. Former Chief Isom is on our advisory board. Jennifer Joyce, the circuit attorney, is on our advisory board. The city and state officials, they have been incredibly supportive of this because, again, this is a better idea than what we've been doing. And so we really have broad support in all the different communities we've been working with.
We only have about a minute left. Sheila, in that time, if any women are listening to this program right now that were in your kind of situation, what do you want to tell them?
That there's hope. That there's hope, and it's on its way.
And Becca, do you want to follow up on that?
No, I just think that it's going to take all of us. And I think looking back when we see this forming, we're going to be so grateful that it started here, and the women that we will have met will have changed our lives too.
And Mike, we discussed earlier the fact that you are looking for a house, and that mm-hmm. undoubtedly is going to happen. But what are the next steps leading to the opening of that house when you find it?
Next steps is we're going to start hiring staff. We're going to hire an executive director this fall and hire a program director spring of 2014. And we're going to open the house by the end of 2014.
Well, it sounds like a great program, and obviously it's the one that's necessary. I'm still stunned by, Becca, your figure of 100,000 women in this country, and my guess is that might even be a little bit low. Would you think so?
I think so.
Thank you so much. That's Reverend Becca Stevens.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you
so
much.
We love NPR.
Well, I know you do. You've had some exposure. I know it's been helpful to you. That's Becca Stevens, founder of Magdalen, which we've been talking about today. Reverend Mike Kimmon is with us in studio. He's the president of the board of Magdalen of St. Louis, which will be coming soon. Sheila McLean is with us in studio. She is also working with Magdalen. Thank you so much, Sheila, for being with us. And also our thanks to Christine McDonald, who was with us earlier. Now, I'll ask you to join Steve Potter tomorrow for Cityscape, that is. We'll talk with the director and cast members of St. Louis Actors Studios' production of Talking Heads, with Elaine Veitz about her latest dead-end job mystery and her benefit for the ALS Association. And in the next edition of Soundbite series produced for Sauce Magazine, you'll talk with author and food activist Michael Pollan And speaking of Michael Pollan, Monday on St. Louis on the Air will feature the conversation I will have with him at the Maryville Talks Books event tonight at 7 o'clock at the Skip Frost Center for the Arts at Chaminade College Preparatory School on Lindbergh. Archive versions of past St. Louis on the Air programs are available for download or podcast at sdlpublicradio.org. This program is produced by Mary Edwards and Alex Hoyer with production assistance from Aaron Dorr, Spencer Reed, and Drew Becker. The executive producer is Robert Peterson. St. Louis on the Air is a production of St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. Thank you so much for listening. I'm Don Marsh.